Good morning.
Morning.
The opening this morning went right along with what we're going to be looking at now. I invite your attention to Job chapter 1. A familiar story, but I want to glean something a little different from it this morning. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she-asses and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the east. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and to drink with them. And it came to pass, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus did Job continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hath not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." The Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. And we're familiar with what happens. All these great calamities come on Job in one day. And then, taken up in verse 20, "Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, 'Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.' In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came before the Lord, and came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, 'From whence comest thou?' And Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it.' The Lord said unto Satan, 'Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause?' And Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face.' The Lord said unto Satan, 'Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life.' So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. He took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, 'Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die.' But he said unto her, 'Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips.'" "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" It's like, yeah, I've seen him. I've seen him, and it irritates me to no end that I can't get at him because you made this hedge around him. You think he's really something special. But did you know that you just bought his loyalty? He's only in it for the gain that he gets out of it. He doesn't actually care about you. He's only serving you because he's learned from experience that when he does that, things go materially well with him. Don't you realize, God, he's just using you. I was like, hey, I don't see any basis for that accusation, but how would I prove it wrong? Go ahead. Check him out. See if that's the case. And then it's like, come back a little while later, and it's like, have you seen it? Consider my servant Job? It's like, yeah. I've been thinking about a lot about him lately, and I thought, you know what, if we could just go a little farther. There's a lot that a person will give as long as they themselves are comfortable, but when your body starts aching and you can't get away from the pain, it's like, yeah, that'll bring him down. Satan had been around a while, and he's got some pretty good insight there, I think. That, as a general rule, will destroy most anybody. It will cause them to turn their back on God for almost everybody. Once you take away any possibility of material gain or physical comfort, it's like, why would I still serve God? Anyway, it's a very successful tactic, and we do well to take note of it and to be wary of it, that Satan would not use that to hinder us. Job, basically saying Job's only in it for his own present comfort. You remove that. Well, he removed that, and Job continued on. Many will worship God as long as it does not cost them their present either material wealth or enjoyment. And, you know, we're familiar with the beginning of the story, and then we know how it ends. And I think too often that's all we get out of it, the beginning and the end. And I want to ask us the question, have we considered God's servant Job? And not considering him as the devil considered him. The devil was considering him as far as how he could make Job fall. He was a thorn in the devil's flesh or side. Not sure what flesh the devil has, but let us consider Job with the intent to learn what we can from him. Because here is a man that God bears testimony. He's a perfect and an upright man, right man, one who feareth God and escheweth evil. How many times does God say that about somebody? It's not very often. And so we do well to examine what we can of Job's life to gain as much insight as possible to know how that we could be better fitted for God to be able to say that about us. So let's take a little closer look at him. And one of the first things, yes, he was perfect and upright, but expand on that. I mean, he hated evil. It's like practical demonstrations. It's like, okay, let's go for it. In the first chapter here already, his children are getting together and celebrating. Okay? It seems like maybe with birthday celebrations, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Job didn't have a problem with that. However, he realized that in the midst of such joyful occasions, special times like that, there's a greater than average possibility of unguarded moments. In other words, when you're freely visiting and you just say something to him that you normally wouldn't say, or you treat him a little too casually or something. It's more prone to happen when you're at ease than when you're, you know, hard at work, desperate for survival or something along that line. So he realized that possibility. And he was very concerned about it. And hence the reason for his sacrifices and such. But could Job's children do wrong? Job was such a perfect and an upright man. Could his children do wrong? It's like, well, he didn't think they were above doing wrong. But with such a perfect father, how could they? No. He was very much, he was so well versed in human nature and everything, and the tendencies that we're so prone to fall into, that he understood that yes, despite the fact that he was their father, they could very well do wrong. And he has that understanding and takes it seriously even in the absence of any accusation against them. He just knows well enough the way humans operate that it's like, you know, in that feast, there could have been some seeds of disintegration that were planted. I don't know if there was. I have no reason to think there was, but it might have been. And so he was very cautious there. He was very wise. And can you imagine what would have happened if somebody would have brought an accusation about one of his children, some misconduct that they had done? Would he have just brushed it off? No, he would have. He would have looked into it to know if indeed it was true and make sure it only happened once. Okay. In Job chapter 23, verse 10, but he, the God, knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Now, when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Is he being presumptuous here? Is he being just arrogant? No. God has given testimony concerning Job that he was this type of a person. And Job's statement here is not based on an ignorant conscience. Job's statement is based on an educated conscience. He knows that he has been walking according to what God has commanded him. And that he was in alignment with it. And I think it's beautiful. He says that his commandments of his lips, I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Was he honest? Is Job being honest with us? Or is he exaggerating? When God bears testimony of a person, such high testimony, do you think he's likely to start lying right here? No, I think this is true, and that's why he had kept God's commandments, because he held them in higher esteem, or in other words, he put more value on them than he did on his necessary food, his daily sustenance. In other words, his ultimate delight was knowing God. And it's no wonder then that God had such a high regard for Job. Job chapter 29. Practical demonstrations of Job's godliness. And we receive this testimony from Job, but we have no reason to doubt it. Moreover, Job continued his parable and said, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me, when his candle shined upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle. When the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me, when I washed my steps with butter and the rock poured out rivers of oil, when I went out to the gate through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street. It seems like Job was a magistrate. He was one of the rulers. And we look at this chapter as Job as a magistrate, how he conducted himself. The young men saw me and hid themselves, and the aged arose and stood up. The princes refrained talking and laid their hand on their mouth. The nobles held their peace, and their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. It's interesting how when Job came through, the people saw themselves in comparison to Job and they recognized what they were in comparison. It had a way of ending conversations. It had a way of making the aged even arise up. The young men were so conscious of their own faults that it's like, Job shows up, we're going to hide. But a lot of respect there for him, a lot of understanding that he of his wisdom. Because I delivered the poor that cried, and the fatherless, and him that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not, I searched out. You see there his compassion. He used his role as a magistrate there to see to it that justice was done. I mean, you weren't going to take advantage of somebody because of some, you know, handicap that they had. No. I break the jaws of the wicked and pluck the spoil out of his teeth. It's like, criminals beware. You don't want to practice in Job's jurisdition. He'll make things right. He was very stern with those who needed it. Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root was spread out by the waters, and the dew lay all night upon my branch. My glory was fresh in me, and my bow was renewed in my hand. Unto me men gave ear, and waited, and kept silence at my counsel. After my words they spake not again, and my speech dropped upon them. And they waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the latter rain. If I laughed on them, they believed it not. At the light of my countenance they cast not down. I choose out a way, and sat chief, and dwelt as a king in the army, and sat as one that comforteth the mourners. They respected him because they had learned that his wisdom was far superior to what they had. This was a perfect and the upright man. What a thing to strive for, that we would be such that people would be able to respect what we have to say. It says, you know, I spake and they answered not again. They were so struck by the wisdom of it all. It's like, you know what? You did such a thorough job. You considered everything. We don't have any way to argue with that. The wisdom is so manifest. There's no getting around it. Your use of your position to enforce justice is just awesome. It's something to strive for. You may not be a magistrate, but wherever you are we using positions this respectably, in such a noble manner? Job 31, we could call it Job at home. starting at verse 7. If my step hath turned out of the way, and my heart walked after mine eyes, and if any blot hath cleaved to mine hands, then let me sow, and let another reap, eat. Yea, let my offspring be rooted out. If mine heart hath been deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind unto another, and let others bow down upon her. For this is an heinous crime. Yea, it is an iniquity to be punished by the judges. For it is a fire that consumeth to destruction, and would root out all mine increase. Something about the way the light reflects off the page. Occasionally I have trouble seeing one word. But anyway, we'll figure it out. If I did despise... Okay. Job did not live by appetite here. If my step turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes, and if any blot hath cleaved to mine hands, he's not done that. He's walked uprightly. He's walked according to God's ways. If I did despise the cause of my manservant or of my maidservant when they contended with me, what then shall I do when God riseth up? And when he visiteth, what shall I answer him? Did not he that made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless hath not eaten thereof, for from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warm but with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless when I saw my help in the gate, and let mine arm fall from his shoulder blade, and mine arm be broken from the bone. For destruction from God was a terror to me, and by reason of his highness I could not endure. Job understood. He talks about his manservant or his maidservant having an issue with him and his treatment of them. He understood that, you know, the same God made us both. And it happens that I am his Lord at this time, but that's just because God has placed me there. I better be careful how I conduct myself here, because I'll give an account to God. So he treated his fellow humans considerately, justly, because of that. And when the poor and the needy were there, he had mercy on them, knowing that God could easily reverse their situations. He could be the poor man desperately in need of help. And yet God has seen fit that he was the wealthy one at this time. So it's like, open my hands, and the blessing of him that was without clothing was poured out, would turn towards Job. He wished God's blessing upon Job because of his kindness. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence. If I rejoiced because my wealth was great, and because mine hand had gotten much. If I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart has been secretly enticed, or my mouth has kissed my hand, this were an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. He was not high-minded. In other words, he had all this wealth, but it had not gone to his head. He didn't take credit to himself for it. If I rejoiced at the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. If the man of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveler. He was not vengeful toward his enemies, those who hated him. He more had a heart like God has, a heart that desired to see their good. Once again, we see compassion toward the stranger. Open my doors to the traveler. It's like, well, don't you realize what you're opening yourself up to? You might get hurt. It's like, hey, there's a risk you take sometimes. If I covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding mine iniquity in my bosom, I take it by putting the blame on somebody else when it actually belongs with you. Job was honest. If it was his fault, it was his fault, and he wasn't going to deny it. Did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of families terrify me that I kept silence and went not out of the door? Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me, and that mine adversary had written a book. Surely I would take it upon my shoulder and bind it as a crown to me. I would declare unto him the number of my steps. As a prince would I go near unto him. If my land cry against me, or that the furrows likewise thereof complain, if I have eaten the fruits thereof without money, or have caused the owners thereof to lose their life, let thistles grow instead of wheat, and cockle instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. He was wealthy, but he had not defrauded others to obtain that. He makes that declaration there. He was honest. He was courageous. He wasn't intimidated by, you know, what are people going to say? What kind of opposition is this going to create? No, if it was right, we're going to do it. Thinking about, hast thou considered my servant Job? Got me to thinking about the word consider. Think about it this morning as give close study to and then acting appropriately on what you've found. I want to look at this word consider and considereth other places in the Bible as well. And we'll find that basically it was all stuff that Job manifested. Psalms chapter 8. A foundation to most of our consideration, I believe, considering, is found here. Psalms 8, verse 3. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy hands, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thine hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. Consider the heavens. You know, I get an interesting feeling when I go out at night and gaze up into a clear sky, see the vast number of stars, and think about them being huge, and yet they look so tiny. And then I get this feeling of being really tiny. And it's just an interesting feeling. And it's a good for us feeling, too, to realize that in comparison to what God has made, I as an individual am quite small. Helps me feel little in my own sight. And that's a good thing. Saul was useful when he was little in his own sight. But little in my own sight, then I am teachable. Another thing is, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou hast made him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Consider this, that God has put us in a position of stewardship. We need to consider that and realize that we are stewards of all this. Therefore, he obviously has a will that we should perform. He obviously made a steward for some good purpose. So consider the heavens. Consider yourself in comparison. Consider the fact that God has actually given you surprisingly much thought and put you in a position of dominion. Chapter 41 of Psalms. As we consider that, it helps us keep ourselves in our proper place and look to God for direction to know how we shall fulfill our stewardship role. Psalm 41, blessed is he that considereth the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive, and he shall be blessed upon the earth. And thou wilt not deliver him unto the will of his enemies. The Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing. Thou wilt make all his bed in his sickness. Considereth the poor. He seeketh to know and relieve the handicapped. He doesn't try to ignore it. He doesn't try and pretend that they don't exist. But rather, he's open and watching for opportunities to aid somebody where they need it. And the reason I said handicapped is because there's numerous ways of being poor. Poor can include just a lack of an ability to function, what do you say, normally or in a productive manner. And that can include, you know, whether it is eyesight or deafness, or there's numerous things that I think would fit right into that category. God wants us to have a special concern and a special looking out for such people and situations that we could be a blessing to them. You know, sometimes there's a concern that, well, you know, if I help, then I won't have for my future need. It's like, well, there's a little bit of a place for that, but consider this, that God will preserve him and keep him alive, and he shall be blessed upon the earth, and thou wilt not deliver him up unto the will of his enemies. All my saving, all my careful forethought for myself cannot guarantee that. It cannot guarantee what God promises to do when I'm concerned about being a blessing to the needy. When I'm concerned about blessing them, then God will take special oversight of me. Right. In my troubles, yeah, I still have troubles, but there will be a special oversight there in the midst of my troubles. The Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing. Thou wilt make all his bed in his sickness. You know, when you come to your deathbed, I think God will be especially near and comforting to you. And you will have the comfort of knowing that my stewardship, I have used it wisely. Now, you won't have to look back on your life and think, oh, I can think of 37 times when I should have been helpful to those people that were in need, or however many times. Numerous times. You won't have that regret to dwell on as you're laying there, not much else to think about except your pain or whatever. Proverbs 24. So a special consideration of the poor. Mindful of the fact that the providence of God could just as easily have put you in the poor position and the other person in the being able to help you position. Proverbs 24, verse 30. I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw, and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Here we have a man with opportunities. The man had a vineyard. He had a field, a vineyard, a stone wall. He was set up to be able to be productive, but he was lacking self-discipline. He was lacking the willingness to apply himself to anything productive. He would rather just do things that he enjoyed. His particular thing seemed to be just sleeping. There's other ways in which you can basically sleep with the opportunities that God has given to us. And so we fail to make use of the opportunities that we have. And it can be opportunities in many different realms. But we don't make use of them because we have something that we prefer, something that's easier, more comfortable. But Solomon was able to see this and consider it well. And he looked upon it and received instruction. We need to learn to do that as well. To be able to observe those around us. It takes a period of time sometimes, but learn to recognize cause and effect. It's like this man's desire to just sleep a little more. And his vineyard, how it looks now. It's like, there's a connection. I don't want my vineyard to look that way. I shouldn't imitate what he's doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To be able to recognize that. And to act accordingly then. Don't just assume that I can sleep and my vineyard, it don't have wheat seeds in. It won't grow thistles. The stone wall is built to last 100 years. No, don't assume that. Learn from the mistakes of others. You know, work has blessings. There's an orderly vineyard, a productive vineyard to be had. There's opportunities available that can produce much good. If we apply ourselves, use the abilities that God has given to us, and there's a time for sleep as well. But when sleep becomes the primary focus, it ruins all kinds of good things. But learn to be able to consider what's going on around us. You see people demonstrating different good things, bad things. And learn. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy 4:39. Know therefore, God's talking to Israel, this day, and consider it in thine heart, that the Lord, He is God in heaven above and upon the earth beneath. There is none other. Thou shalt keep therefore His statutes and His commandments, which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. God speaking, He is God. He is the Almighty. He says, there is none else. In other words, if you want help, don't go looking for anybody else, because I'm the only one there is. And I've told you how to please me. And I've told you that if you please me, it will go well with you. Consider now what you ought to do. we do well to consider as well. Is there only one God? Has He told us how to please Him? Has He told us that if we please Him, it will go well with us? What should we do? Are we going to act in with due consideration to what we've considered? Chapter 8 of Deuteronomy. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall ye observe to do, that it ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, and a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. We do well to remember the way that God has led us in days past. In providing for us. Think about all those big trials that you faced in years past and the way God provided a way through them. Consider also how He humbled thee. Talks about humbling them here. Was that humbling? Was talked about lacking bread or caused thee to hunger? Was that a miracle that they hungered? Was that what you would think of as God chastening them? It's like, well, them being hungry was just, they were out in the desert. There was a lot of people. It would take a miracle for them to not be hungry. So, in some ways, it's like, well, was that the chastening of God, or was that just natural cause and effect? But really, what difference does it make? God brought you into these situations. He allowed you to experience this. And it was for the sake of bringing you into an alignment with His desire for you, that He could bring you into this wonderful land. You know, God has an abundant Christian life that He wants us to come into. And He's working step by step to accomplish that in us, to give that to us. Along the way, there will be times hungering, there will be times no water, there will be various trials. And whether it's chastening, whether it's just natural circumstances, doesn't make a whole lot of difference, really. It's God in His wisdom has brought us there, we are experiencing it, and it is for the purpose of perfecting godliness in us. We need to consider, do we value it as much as God does? Would we be willing to work as long for it as God is willing to? If we are, then we're not going to call it quits.
That's right.
Our key to success is the commandments of God. The commandments of God are going to be the roadmap that will take us through it all. Think about it, the miracles. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. So easy sometimes to look at the inconveniences of the way and forget the miraculous provisions. Okay, consider, let's see, where was it? Verse, thou shalt also consider in thine heart, okay, about the chastening. These things in life, God has the ability to work it all together for the perfecting of His people. He has good planned. That's what He's working towards. Ezekiel 18, talking about God's ways versus Israel's ways. You know, Israel saying your ways are not equal, and God is very logical in how He deals. If a good man does that which is right, he has a son that is wicked, and then the grandson in verse 14. Now, lo, if he beget a son, the wicked man begets a son, that seeth all his father's sins which he hath done, and considereth and doeth not such like. In other words, he looks upon what his father's doing, and he compares that with the Word of God. It's like, father, no father. I mean, come on, it's my father, and I would naturally take after him, but he's not doing it according to the Word of God. I know what God has said about such stuff. I will not do like my father is doing. We need to be able to discern. You know, it's somebody close to us, so don't just latch on and say, well, it must be good. No. Discern it in the light of God's Word. And then act accordingly. If it's in line with God's Word, well, embrace it. If it's not, well, stay far from it. Honesty towards other people. And then in verse 27. Again, when the wicked man turneth away from his wickedness that he hath committed, and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive, because he considereth and turneth away from all his transgressions that he hath committed. He shall surely live. He shall not die. Honesty with our own selves. It's like, what am I doing? How does this compare with what the Word of God says? What does the Word of God say concerning people who do that? And then act accordingly. Don't just figure, well, it's me now, so I'll get by with it.
Right.
Just because I do it doesn't mean that it is right. If the Word of God endorses it, then it's right. Mark chapter 6. The ability to honestly consider both ourselves and those around us. And in Mark chapter 6, we're looking at, and it just fed a great multitude with a few loaves and fishes, and then he sent the multitudes away, and then the disciples went into that ship, and during the night then Jesus came walking on the water, was going to pass them by, and then in verse 49, but when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit, and cried out, for they were all saw him and were troubled, and immediately he talked with them and saith unto them, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship, And the wind ceased, and they were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure, and wondered. For they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. They considered not the miracle of the loaves. They hadn't spent time pondering it and the significance of it. They did not properly consider the goodness and power of God. You know, it's so easy to become so busy. We have things that we want to do, and God does something special, and well, maybe we've seen it before, and so it, the benefits of it largely just pass us by. I've seen this before. I got other stuff to do. Even if it's just simple things like the birth of an animal or something like that. It's like, I've seen this before. I got other stuff planned. It gets in my way a little bit here. It's like, you ever try doing that? You ever try making an animal be born? You know, it's a rather complicated process. You know, it's actually pretty amazing. And you feel like it's kind of a hindrance to your day's work. It's because you've got something else in mind. Anyway, difficulty in properly contemplating, letting it soak in, the miracles that God does for us, the provisions along the way, we miss a lot then, because then we end up with unnecessary fears about tomorrow, about the future. It's like, well, if you're with the same God, don't you think He'll make a way? So when we fail to properly consider today's provision, we are robbing ourselves of a blessing for comfort concerning tomorrow. Hebrews chapter 10. Verse 24. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sore of punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden underfoot the Son of God, and hath pounded the blood of the covenant, wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace. Consider, says in 24, let us consider one another. In what way? To provoke unto love and to good works. In other words, study, how could I encourage you in love and good works? How could I encourage you to faithfully fill the role that God has called you to? What would be beneficial for you, to you, to encourage you in that? It gives the impression that one of the important, one big thing in that is not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. The coming together is supposed to have that effect. If it does not, something's wrong. We need to keep that in mind as we visit together. It's like, this is not just so that I can tell you all my griefs that I've had this past week. That's not the purpose of coming together. If I need encouragement, maybe I should share some so that you can encourage me. But do it in a way that is conducive to edification. It's not to try and brag about my past successes of, you know, material pursuits or something like that. You know, there's a place for sharing such stuff, but we should all be able to leave feeling encouraged or feeling blessed that we were able to encourage somebody else. So there's an exhortation and both a giving and a receiving that should take place. When we are not, you know, we should not just view it as I come to be encouraged, because I can do that online, okay? But there's a blessing to be there and be able to be an exhortation to others that you miss when you're not there. Okay, the assembling together for the purpose of exhortation. Considering the seriousness of not faithfully filling the role that you've been placed in, the judgment that's going to come upon you if you would fall back and not press forward and be found faithful. That should help put some fear in our hearts that would motivate us in this. Turn to chapter 12. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You know, in the previous chapter, it was just talking about these various people who went through such hard trials and some of the great things that they did. And then it says, we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. And think about it like this. All these people have testified of the value of the truth. And now their eyes are on you. It's like, do you believe our testimony? Do you think we were exaggerating? Or do you think that what we said that this was valuable, we were willing to give our life for it, do you believe that? Do you receive that? Are you going to act accordingly? It's now your turn to continue that witness. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, such animosity, such challenges, lest you consider yourself to be overloaded. You know, in comparison to what he went through, what are we facing? Should we expect it to be easier for us? Jesus despised the shame because he had future gain in view. He had that joy that was set before him in view. Therefore, the present pain didn't overwhelm him. Remember, Satan said, basically, you cause present gain or present pain, people will curse you to your face, because present gain is primarily what people are looking for. And so if you remove that, well, Jesus demonstrated present gain is not what he had in mind. He was looking at a future. Therefore, he was willing to go through the present pain for the sake of a brighter future. How would you destroy somebody like that? You Ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. Well, that sounds like present pain. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, no pain, whereof all are partakers, if you're a son, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father's spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. I was trying to remember, now that I've aged a few years past this chastening that my father, my earthly father, would give me, if there was ever a chastening or a correction that I now wish he would not have given me. It's like, well, at the time there was pain involved. But looking back on it now, it's like, well, yeah, I'm glad that he did it. Otherwise, you know, that was a bad, whatever, direction or trait that I was manifesting. I'm glad that he cared enough to correct it. Well, God has so much more insight. Don't you think his chastening is going to be even more valuable? It's going to be more pertinent to exactly what was needed? So, whether it's chastening, whether it's just natural, you know, consequences, I mean, even just eating the fruit of your own ways is chastening to some degree, but whether it's just the world that we live in, all these inconveniences, hardships are allowed, permitted, brought, whatever, for the sake of working us closer to the image of God. When I'm chastened, it is for the purpose of moving me in the direction of greater holiness. What other direction would I want to go? Present pain for future gain. If in the midst of these trials I can keep the right focus, the lame may take heart and find victory. In other words, in the midst of the chastening I'm receiving, I need to be mindful of the fact that others are watching me. Somebody who may be on the brink of destruction is watching me. And if they see me responding with bitterness, that may be the last thing, the last straw that causes them to just turn their back on God. So there's a lot of weight there, that as we have chastening, as God is working to perfect us, to keep our attitude in line, to strive to be a proper example, that those who are watching us would be blessed and not hindered. So there's a lot of considering that we are supposed to do. Are we properly considering these things? Or are we hoping to be fine without them? Yet I think we'll find that we cannot be brought to maturity in the image of God without a proper consideration of these numerous different things. It's all a part of bringing us to maturity, and we do ourselves a great injustice to not give proper consideration to all these things.